Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 81. The Lord blesses Sudama Brahmana. Text 24, word meanings. Avam, thus, Mimangsamanam, who was deeply pondering, Tam, him, Naraha, the men, Naryaha, and women, Amara, like the demigods, Prabha, whose effulgent complexions, Pratyagrinan, greeted, Mahabhagam, most fortunate, Gita, with singing, Vadyena, with instrumental accompaniment, Puyasa, loud. Evamimangsamanantam Naranaryo Maraprabha Pratyagrinan Mahabhagam Gita Vajena Bhuyasa Evamimangsamanantam Naranaryo Maraprabha Pratyagrinan Mahabhagam Gita Vajena Bhuyasa Evamimangsamanantam Naranaryo Maraprabha Pratyagrinan Mahabhagam Gita Vajena Bhuyasa. Evamimangsamanantam Naranayo Maraprabha Pratyagrinan Mahabhagam Gita Vajena Bhuyasa Emamimangsamanantam Naranayo Maraprabha Pratyagrinan Mahabhagam Gita Vajena Bhuyasa Evamimangsamanantam Naranaryo Maraprabha Pratyagrinan Mahabhagam Gita Vajena Bhuyasa. Ladies. Evamimangsamanantam Naranaryo Maraprabha Pratyagrinan Mahabhagam Vajena Bhuyasa. Evamimangsamanantam Naranayo Maraprabha Pratyagrinan Mahabhagam Gita Vajena Bhuyasa. Translation. As he continued to ponder in this way, the beautiful men and maidservants, as effulgent as demigods, came forward to greet their greatly fortunate master with loud song and instrumental music. Purport. As explained by Acharya Vishwanath Chakrabarti, the word Pratyagrinan, they acknowledged in turn, indicates that first Sudama accepted the servants within his mind deciding my Lord must want me to have them. And in response to the visible change in his attitude, they approached him as their master. Next 25, we can chant together. Potimagatam akarnya potnyudharshati samrama nishnyakama vihakturnam upenishirivalayat. When she heard that her husband has arrived, the brahmana's wife quickly came out of the house in a jubilant flurry. She resembled the goddess of fortune herself emerging from her divine abode. Purport. Srila Sridhar Swami points out that since Lord Krishna had turned Sudama's home into a heavenly abode, everyone living there now possessed beautiful bodies and attire appropriate to the residents of heaven. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti adds this insight. The night before, Sudama's poor emaciated wife had been sleeping in rags under a crumbling roof. But when she woke in the morning, she found herself and her house wonderfully changed. Only for a moment was she confused. She then realized that this opulence was the Lord's gift to her husband, who must be on his way home. Thus she prepared to greet him. 26. Prativrata patim drishtva premotkanta shulochana militaksha namad buddhya manasa parishashpaje. When the chaste lady saw her husband, her eyes filled with tears of love and eagerness. As she held her eyes closed, she solemnly bowed down to him, and in her heart she embraced him. And finally, 27. Patnim viksha vispuranam devim vaimanikim iva dasinam nashika kantinam madye bhantim savismitaha. Sudama was amazed to see his wife shining forth in the midst of maidservants adorned with jeweled lockets. She looked as effulgent as a demigoddess in her celestial airplane. Purport. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti explains that up to now, the Supreme Lord had kept the brahmana in his wretched state so that his wife could recognize him. Om Jnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Milita Mena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. I was singing as we were reading the earlier, the last chapter, this story of Sudama and Krishna. Such a wonderful story, Krishna's relationship. I was thinking, I think this is the only time where we hear Krishna talking about himself. We usually hear someone else telling Krishna's pastime. This is an example of Krishna telling a pastime, his pastime in the Gurukul with one of his friends, Sudama. This Sudama, he's also called Sridama. In the Vishnu Sahasranam Stotra, there's one glorification of Krishna as the friend of Sridama, who refers to the Sudama. And in the Gopala Champu, Jiva Goswami describes that Krishna had a special affection for him immediately just because of his name, because he reminded him of his friend Sridama in in Vrindavan. The same thing is mentioned about Arjuna, because Krishna has a friend named Arjuna in Vrindavan. So when he met Arjuna immediately, just because of his name, he wanted to be his friend because his name was the same. This, of course, in our Gaudiya Vaishnavas, they're kind of fixated on Krishna and Vrindavan, Goloka Vrindavan. This is one of the themes you see in the Gopal Champu. Even though Krishna's in Dwarka, he's always thinking about what's going on in Vrindavan, or he's longing always for Vrindavan. So our acharyas, they always bring that out, the Vrindavan rasa. Actually, our acharyas are expert at this. Gopi Pranadanapuru, I was listening to one of his lectures, and he was explaining how in other sampradayas, they're especially interested in vichar, He says, especially like the Madhvites, they're really in, vichar means to look very closely and analyze the philosophy very, very meticulously, different aspects of philosophy. But our Vaishnava, Gaudiya Vaishnava acharyas, they're more interested in rasa. They're more interested in rasa than vichara. They want to churn out the nectar. We sometimes say they're nectar hounds. The Gaudiya Vaishnavas, they're always looking for special aspects of Krishna's relationship with his devotees to try to bring them out. Actually related philosophically in this verse today, the second word, mimangsamanam, this just attracted my, when I saw this, oh, mimangsa. We've heard this word, mimangsa. Krishna's preached mimangsa philosophy, karma mimangsa philosophy, during the Govardhan Leela. He was arguing, debating with Nanda Maharaj, whether the sacrifice, trying to get him not to perform the sacrifice to Indra. So there he was teaching karma mimangsa philosophy. This is what mimangsa means, actually. The word mimangsa means to deeply ponder, to study very deeply, very closely. So this is the philosophy of Jaimini Rishi. He's the propounder of karma mimangsa, which is also called purva mimangsa. And Vyasadev, his philosophy is called uttara mimangsa. So purva means the former, and uttara means the latter, the later. It also actually means superior or higher. So Vyasadev's is the, you might say, the fulfillment. Because there are many good things, actually, in the philosophy of Jaimini. Jaimini and his disciplic succession, they established the procedure for studying Shastra, for studying the Vedas, especially the Upanishads, how to go about it, certain rules of interpretation. For example, there's a very famous one that's often quoted. It's the rule of the village on the Ganges. This illustrates the principle that when you're first trying to understand what something means, whether Shastrik, one of the what the Shruti is saying, first of all, you should just take it on face value, basically what it says literally. Now, if that doesn't work, then you take it metaphorically. That's the second step. There's Mukhya Vritti and Gauna Vritti. So this idea of the village of the on the Ganges, you had to take that metaphorically because a village can't literally be on the Ganges. When you say a village on the Ganges, it means a village on the bank of the Ganges. So this rule. So this is a kind of thing that Jaimini and his followers have established. And our acharyas, Jiva Goswami, for example, in his Sandarbhas, he relies on this method of interpretation, and he quotes these rules sometimes when he's making a point. For example, sometimes he chastises the Mayavadis for jumping always immediately to the metaphorical interpretation. They try to twist things around by not taking directly what it actually says. Just like we know the Gita commentators, we're always scratching our heads. We think, well, how can they not get this? It's very clear directly what Krishna is saying. Because they want to say, oh, it's all metaphor. So if you take it all as metaphor, then the Shruti has no meaning. Then everything is metaphor and no word actually means anything. So Jiva Goswami, he sometimes uses the arguments established by Jaimini and his school for the method of interpretation to point out, for example, how the Upanishads are always establishing Brahman, the Supreme Personality of, and Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, or Brahman as a person, and the duality that exists, not only the oneness, but also the duality. So again, Jaimini, sometimes we think, oh, these other philosophers, there's something bad about them. But Jaimini is one of the disciples of Vyasadeva, and he was entrusted with the Samaveda. And in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, of the Vedas, I'm the Samaveda. Samaveda is hymns. Another thing Gopi Pranadan Prabhu explains, there's some of his lectures I'd listen to where he explains all about Vedic sacrifice and all the different priests and also different aspects of the Vedas, which I've never been really clear exactly how it all works with the Brahmanas and Aranyakas and Upanishads and so on. So one thing he explains about the Samaveda, he says it's like when you're having a sacrifice, the priests who are chanting the Samaveda, they're like when you have at least formerly, a very rich person would have some function at his house, and when a guest would arrive at the door, then they would be announced. Oh, here is Colonel so-and-so along with his wife, and he fought in this battle or whatever. So they announce their esteemed guest to everyone who's assembled there. So this is what the Psalm of Veda does. It says, here is Indra, he slayed Vritrasura, and all these kinds of things. So there, because the sacrifice, all the demigods arrive there, they get their, the oblations are offered to the demigods. So they arrive, and the Psalm of Veda glorifies them. So there's a priest who's chanting those hymns, and there's another priest who's chanting other hymns, and so on. So this is one aspect of it. So that's a little something about Mimamsa, which really has nothing to do with this, what's going on here, but I thought it was interesting. Now what caught my attention, this has caught my attention before, is in this third, but when we hear about this verse, you could almost think that it's somebody's talking about the gopis and Krishna, maybe. Prativrata pating drishtva premot kantashru dochanam. These words here. This is the wife seeing her husband arrive. Premot kantashru dochanam. So prema. She's feeling prema. The first time I noticed that prema wasn't used only for Krishna was I noticed it in the pastime of Kardama Muni and Devahuti. It says that Devahuti served him premna, in prema. So the word love in Sanskrit, prema, it is actually used in a more generic sense. It's not only used for Krishna. This reminds me when I was a young boy in grade school, first, second grade maybe, we were taught that you always use love only for people and you use like for things. You're not supposed to say, I love ice cream. That's not right. I think times have changed. They're not so strict about such things. So I always thought, you only use prema for Krishna, huh? But you go in the Bhagavatam and you see, actually, the word prema is used for other things. And of course, because of this, sometimes I think, I don't know if I've made any advancement in Krishna consciousness, but I think maybe my thinking has changed a little bit. I'll tell you one story. I mean, I know, early in Krishna consciousness, the whole idea of family affection, that's bad. Family affection is bad, huh? I'll give you an example, kind of embarrassing actually, but I used to drive the Sankirtan van. We had a fired up brahmachari party going out to Fisherman's Wharf, which is the tourist place in San Francisco. So I would usually be the person driving the van. We'd drive over from Berkeley over to San Francisco. So every day we'd get ready in the parking lot, load up the van, put the books in and so on. And the van had windows, it was a passenger van, so it had windows all around. So we're all ready to go. I looked around, didn't see anything. So I started backing up, and I hear a thump. And then, wah! Oh, it's like, oh my gosh, what happened? So then I ran out of the van, and I looked, and there was a child, 2 or 3 years old, a little girl. She had been standing beside the back bumper of the van, and I hit her, and it just knocked her down, and then she was just underneath the car, so she didn't get run over. So what happened, her mother was downstairs in the pujari room, and she heard this scream, and she came running out. My baby, my baby, my baby. And now this is the embarrassment. My thought at that time was, she's so attached. You're not supposed to be attached. So, of course, she's still alive, actually. This girl is still alive. Her name is Jamuna Jivana. Actually, she's the daughter of Bhaktadas. That was his wife. I forget what her name was now. Sharanam or something like that. So because we hear a lot about not being attached. And in fact, there's a verse, Yeva maishe kriti sodidarta janeshu deyambara vartikeshu griheshu jayapata rati matsu na priti yukta yavarartas chaloke. So this is the third of Rishabhdev's verses. Now, Rishabhdev, he's a pretty heavy preacher. So in that verse, basically what he says is the devotee who really wants to be Krishna conscious has no affection, na priti yukta, for family, home, wife, and the rest. I mean, literally the word is na priti yukta. Now, Prabhupada translates as not being attached, but if you look at literally, priti means love, right? Yukta means to be engaged. So he doesn't engage his love in society, friendship, and love. He's not into those things. And in fact, in the purport to that verse, Prabhupada says, the householder only earns money to execute bhakti yoga, only for that, for shravanam, kirtanam, vishnu, smaranam, padasevanam. No, not for sense gratification. So anyway, kind of, you know, we get this, maybe this really hard sense of detachment and no love, and, you know, of course, that's caused problems in our society. So how do you balance these things? So here we see quite an interesting example. This lady, the wife of Sudama Brahmana, she's, her husband is arriving, and it says prema, utkanta, with eagerness. This is another one of those words that we find in the Nectar of Devotion in Chaitanya Charitamrita when we're hearing about the gopis. What their eagerness is to have Krishna, it's a bhava. And ashru lochana, her eyes are filled with tears. So, apparently, in Krishna consciousness, there can be love. You can love your family. You should love your family. In fact, there's the purport in Bhagavad Gita, I printed this out, it's in the 13th chapter, where those aspects of knowledge are there. So there's detachment from family, wife, home, and the rest. There's that verse. Asaktir anabhishwanga putradhar grihadishu. So that's one of the constituents of knowledge. Detachment from family, wife, home, and the rest. Sons, putradhara grihadishu. So literally sons, wife, and home, or household. So in the purport, Prabhupada says, as for detachment from children, wife, and home, it is not meant that one should have no feeling for these. They are natural objects of affection. But when they are not favorable to spiritual progress, then one should not be attached to them. So the first thing I think, when Prabhupada says they are natural objects of affection, if you don't have affection, then that's unnatural. Actually, there's something wrong with you as a pure person, as a human being, if you don't have natural affection for your own family, your own children, and so on. So then Prabhupada says, he explains here how to spiritualize your home, because he said, well, the what ties this all to Krishna consciousness, family, that you try to make your family Krishna conscious. And he mentions four things here. You chant Hare Krishna, you study the scriptures, you take prasadam, and you worship the deity. These four things you do in your home. So this is the point. This is how Prabhupada sort of resolves it here, because the verse says not to have affection for them or to be detached from them. But Prabhupada says, well, be detached if it's a problem for your Krishna consciousness, if they're detrimental to your Krishna consciousness, but try to make your family Krishna conscious. So we find, actually, and there are quite a few places, actually, in the Bhagavatam where this idea of prema comes up in ordinary relationships. We see it, for example, in Prithu Maharaj. You know how first Prithu Maharaj was so angry at the earth, he was ready to kill her. He aimed his bow and arrow at the earth. He was going to kill the earth personified. But later she satisfied him. And it said he loved him like his own daughter after that. So that shows up in that relationship. We see it in among the Pandavas, between each other. We see it in the Pandavas in relationship to Bhishma Dev. So in quite a few places, the word prema actually comes up in ordinary relationships in this so-called, in this material world. Of course, often it's between these very exalted devotees. I suppose one could rationalize and say, well, you know, if you're hard line, no affection, you could say, well, these are Vaishnavas, so then it's okay. But there is a sense in which, you know, of course, we do live in this world. I heard something recently, I forget where I read this, or I heard it, one devotee was explaining a lecture I was listening to. And he was, I think it may have been Ridhananda Maharaj was making some point, and he was explaining how one time Prabhupada was, he spent a night at someone's house, some older man who was maybe like Prabhupada's contemporary. And they actually, they slept together in the same room, or maybe it was on the veranda or something. And the man said the next day that they were up late at night just talking about, you know, just shooting the breeze, basically, in a friendly way. Prabhupada was relating to this man in just an ordinary way, just like a friend. Just down to earth, you might say. So in many ways, that's what we, you know, devotees who had Prabhupada's intimate association, they saw how down to earth he was. And, you know, just a natural, he was a natural human being. He was in this world. Even though we get, there are verses in the Bhagavatam and purports in the Bhagavatam where the Mukta Purusha said, for example, that example is given, is just like the coconut, the meat of the coconut is separated from the shell of the coconut. So completely detached. We may have this idea, completely detached and not, you know, in this world at all. But Prabhupada certainly acted like an ordinary person in this world. And in fact, that was many what endeared many devotees to him. You hear the old devotees who had personal association with Prabhupada, how so many endearing things that he did, that now still they have such great attachment for Prabhupada, sometimes primarily just because of ordinary exchanges that they had with him. So that's certainly part of the life of a devotee. Of course, it's said that you can't understand the Vaishnava, an ordinary person can't understand. So his consciousness is something that's achintya for us, inconceivable for us. So somehow the Mahatmas, it can do both of these things. There's a nice example actually in the story of Paranjana, created a second son? Beginning of the fifth canto, his story is there. Begins with a P. I'm forgetting his name right now. King Priyavrata. Okay, Priyavrata. So King Priyavrata, if you remember the story, the beginning of the fifth canto, he's renounced actually because Narada Muni is preaching to him. So everybody Narada Muni preaches to becomes wants to take sannyas basically, as we see in the pastimes, certain other pastimes. So Priyavrata is renounced. He's ready to go to the Himalayas or something. But he's asked to take charge of the world. So he's hesitant to do it. And of course, Lord Brahma has to come down and preach to him and get him to do it because Swayambhuva Manu wants him to do it. So Lord Brahma, one of the last things he says, you should do this because extraordinarily the Lord, you should enjoy, accept this material enjoyment because extraordinarily the Lord has ordered you to do it. So basically he's saying, you know, of course it's in material enjoyment, it's material pleasure, it's society, friendship, and love that he's engaging himself in, which he would always, he was already convinced that he should have no part of. But he's doing it on the order of the Lord. But it's there in the translation of the words, extraordinarily the Lord has asked you to do it. So one way we reconcile everything by trying to connect everything to Krishna. Of course, Priyavrata Maharaj, he was a devotee of the Lord, so engaged the whole world in the service of the Lord. A nice example also is, of course, when one is doing one's service, which raising one's family for a grihastha, taking care of one's family, that's actually part of service. You can't just reject it. One's duty. So in Chaitanya Charitamrita, we have the story of the Korma Brahman, of course. He wanted to leave home and follow Lord Chaitanya. He wanted to just give up everything. Lord Chaitanya told him, Yari deka tari kaha Krishna upadesh, amar jai guru haya tari desh. Just stay here and preach. That's all. You don't need to follow me. Stay here and preach. Become a guru right here in your own neighborhood. Then he said, Gabunat, Badibi Toma Vishaya Taranga Punarapi E Tai Pabi Mora Sangha. And he says, then if you do that, if you follow this order, then Vishaya Taranga, which means the waves of sense gratification, will not touch you. So even though you're in the midst of the life of sense, which Grihastha life is sometimes synonymous with sense gratification. The words are kind of used, phrases are kind of used interchangeably. It's kind of assumed that if you're a grihastha, you're in Maya. That the life of sense gratification. But Lord Chaitanya says, Vishaya Taranga, the waves of sense gratification or material existence won't touch you if you're doing this. Pabhi Mora Sangha, you'll have my association constantly. Of course, that's the solution to the whole thing. All of these things can be encompassed within Krishna consciousness. Expertise, and one of the 26 qualities of a devotee is the devotee is expert. So a devotee has to be expert in this, managing ordinary affairs in this world while having an elevated state of consciousness. There's a certain sense of detachment, but there's also attachment to performing one's duty, maintaining Krishna consciousness, and making it all perfect in that way. We see Prabhupada, of course, as the ideal in that, and everything throughout his life, all different phases of his life, how he was always so conscientious about putting Krishna in the center and making it all work perfectly. So I'll stop here. Any questions or comments? Guru Maharaj Prabhu?
You were talking about attachment. I just remember like one of the first questions I asked when I came to Krishna consciousness, the devotee and his family who brought me, I asked them that, now you are devotees, do you have attachment to your children? And they said, of course, yes. We have greater attachment because they are devotees of Krishna. So you know, I was thinking that that there might be some differences between affection for your family and detachment for them at the same time. And you know, in the life of Kunti Devi, you know, she prayed to Krishna that, okay, let me be detached from my family and the Vrishnis, and let my attention only be drawn into you. So they are all great devotees, or her children, there's no question about that, greatest devotees on the planet. And still she was praying like that, so there seems to be like there is some kind of a difference with the attachment and affection and detachment. If you can explain a little bit.
One thing, I don't know what that verse, the Sanskrit, I don't know what the word is. She says sever my affection, doesn't she? Or does she say sever my attachment? Ties of affection. What's the Sanskrit word? That's always quite an interesting verse, actually. Oh, sneha. Okay. Sneha is affection. Yeah, so she says sever my affection. It's pretty... That's one thing, that's why this is a difficult, you know, it's a bit of a difficult topic, because you hear things like that. And then you also hear, on the other side, natural affectionate dealings with the family and so on. So it can be a bit of a challenge to make it all work. Janashtami Prabhu?
It seems to me that it's a function of her relationship with Krishna. At one point, you know, for her to be affectionate, that mm-hmm. was the proper service mood. You can't really be a grihastha, a responsible grihastha, if you don't have these kind of positive emotional exchanges with your family member, because it becomes completely dysfunctional, you know, which is what's happened with many of our ISKCON families because of a misunderstanding of that. It's actually, this is, you know, the grihastha training course, they entitle it the Grihastha Training Course, and then the tagline is strengthening the bonds that liberate. So the whole point is that the highest, you know, Prabhupada actually made a point once that my grihasthas are even better than my sannyasis because they're living with Maya, but they're staying Krishna conscious, something like that on those lines. But the point is that Yukta Vairagya principle at this stage, you know, Kunti, Is that favorable, you know, for her devotional service to Krishna because things are winding down, right? That was kind of
I'm sure there are different ways to analyze it. That one is you could say, well, she's speaking like an ordinary person. This is my material family here in the material world, and I shouldn't be attached to them. I should be attached to Krishna. And anyway, I mean, what you're saying is true. Of course, on the other side, it said, just like the last class I gave was about this, feed the stomach, water the root, the principle. So Prabhupada often makes this point, that when you love Krishna, then you love everyone. As you see everyone in relationship with Krishna. So in one sense, you could say that there may be there's a transformation from first it's material affection, then it becomes spiritual affection. When you see the person that you have, people you have contact with, your family, whatever, as Vaishnavas, as servants of Krishna. And of course, the highest devotee, Uttama Bhagavat, sees everyone as the servant of Krishna. So naturally, the love is there on that platform. So I think there are different perspectives and different levels that we could view this this topic. Madan Mohan Prabhu and Raghavendra Mataji after.
Prabhupada dealt with that in the purport when he was giving the lectures on that, and he says to see and be immediate as super soul. In other words, the preaching aspect that they're devotees and your Bhakti Vinod Thakur, he says, because they're all servants of you, that I take care of them, certain devotees. And that fifth canto when you were mentioning that King Viravata, you remember how it started off? There was a question, was it you?
Yeah.
Where he says, how could he do that? He was already an advanced devotee. Could he fall down?
It shows that's kind of like the default understanding. If he's so advanced, how's he getting married? Well, that doesn't
everybody
make any sense.
Knows.
That's sort of how the question comes.
That everybody knows that that's the end of your spiritual life if you're getting. I mean, it's right there the way that everybody knows. But the progression of the fifth canto, you can see as it goes along. You know, you have Lord Rishabhdev, you're quoting chapter there, how it makes this progression of how to get that clarified. I had a question too, because I don't understand so many things where it says attachment to family, home, and the rest.
Yeah.
Now, the rest, sometimes it means two different things. One, it means to taking it easy. And the other way, it's kind of a colloquial term to meaning everything else, et cetera, et cetera.
Everything else except what?
Like et cetera, et cetera.
Well, it means et
cetera. Everything that goes along with it. But I mean, there's
family,
also
wife, home, grihadishu, griha, and so on. So it means your relatives, friends, you know, business associates.
But also we see that the householder, he can go home and rest. But a lot of other ashrams, they don't have rest. They're constantly on the move doing it. So anyway, I wasn't sure if that's tongue-in-cheek or what.
But let's pass the microphone on to Raghavendra Devi Dasi.
Regarding the topic of attachment and detachment, I recall that once the late Mahavishnu Swami, the one who was a disciple of Jivaram Swami, he was speaking about how a grihastha, just like in a drama, the person who plays the role of the demon, if he's detached from how the audience or anybody in the audience that knows him perceives him as being a demon, if he's detached, then he can play the role the best. So also in grihastha life, the grihastha, if he's genuinely detached, he'll play the role very nicely, very responsibly, and very affectionately. So the distinction is the role and our identity. Our identity is to develop that attachment for Krishna. But we can play any role in Krishna's service.
There seems to be something dishonest about that, doesn't it? It's like, I don't really love you, I'm just pretending. It's playing a role, right? I'm playing the dutiful, loving husband, but actually I only love Krishna. My heart's not into it, in other words. I'm just kind of pretending that my heart is into it.
I think sometimes it helps, it comes into play. And it helps.
It comes what?
To remember the role.
Uh-huh.
You know.
I think it's another one of these things that from your advance you can do things that ordinary people can't. Can somehow balance both things. Anything else? Yes.
Actually, I think that somewhere Srila Prabhupada said that we should be like a woman who has a
paramour.
Yes, paramour. Uh-huh. That we perform our official duty perfectly while secretly we take a shelter of our paramour. So So yeah, we can apply that to family life.
That analogy is actually in the context of the Goswamis, I think, isn't it? I think so. Work serving in the government. And yeah, so that's the example that Prabhupada gave. Somehow, well, like I was saying about Prabhupada, he did seem to be interacting on this plane, but we know that the most advanced devotees, their consciousness is absorbed in Krishna. Maybe it's on some other plane simultaneously. So, of course, we're not on that level, but the principle is there. You do everything dutifully. You're not mad. You're not crazy. Don't be a crazy person. The Prabhupada didn't want us to be crazy. There's something about being dutiful in the ordinary course of affairs. There's some phrase like that that Prabhupada uses. Tat karma pravartanat. Do your work in an ordinary, sensible, sane way. But in your heart, always be nurturing your relationship with Krishna. Janashtami Prabhu?
Regarding the point about what you brought up in response to Ragatmakas, it seems that, you know, it doesn't really have to be pretense. It can be just the kind of compassion that Prahlad Maharaj describes, Naivo Dvije Pararambhratya Vaitaranya Sunanda, because he's absorbed in hearing the pastimes of the Lord, or Prabhupada translates it in the CC, he's merged, or he's like in this ocean of transcendental bliss from chanting the holy name. And his only concern is for those fools and rascals, you know, not that necessarily the family members are in that category, but there's a compassion to help them take to Krishna consciousness in a serious way. Mm. And at least the role, you know, that's the ultimate responsibility, Guru Nisashat, Swajanam Nisashat, of the father, you know, that's what he's supposed to do. You know, that's, you know, he shouldn't have gotten into it in the first place if that wasn't his intention. But, so that's it engenders a lot of compassion, you know, and that's certainly a viable Vaishnava emotion, and that very much lines up, you know. So these are people that have come before me, just like, you know, book distribution, express your compassion with who Krishna sends your way, sent these souls into your life. So in that way, it can be a very genuine, yeah, you know, kind of thought process. This is my responsibility, but then also part of that is this, you know, having genuine concern.
Yeah, the compassion is an aspect of love.
I think so. It seems that way.
Also, I guess it's a question of how do you define love, and how do you, just like people say, I love my family, but what are they doing that's, they're not helping them if they're not giving them Krishna consciousness. So our love is manifest, and we have that feeling of affection. What we don't want is the love that pulls one away from Krishna consciousness. If it causes separation from Krishna, that's what we decry, that kind of love. But if the love is actually really you're helping the person in Krishna consciousness, and as you say, showing compassion in that way, then that's real love, and that's encouraged, whether it's towards your family or anybody else.
It's like a whole Yukta Vairagya, you know, which is the highest platform of proper renunciation.
Yeah. All right, we'll stop here. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.